Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
The following is a lecture on the purpose of life given by His Holiness Gopal Krishna Goswami, recorded on 27th March 2005 in Sri Mayapur Dham, India.
Gopi Jana Balabha
भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
सो सी वांट टू वेलकम ऑल ऑफ यू टू श्री मायापुर धाम एंड एज ऑल ऑफ यू नो The holy Mayapur, the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Thakur Bhaktivinoda, the great Acharya, had predicted that a day would come when people from America, Russia, France, England would come and along with the local Bengalis chant and dance. So today we see that by Srila Prabhupada's efforts, this prediction of Thakur Bhaktivinoda has come true. And before these seminars, before the parikram starts, every year they have these seminars. So today I believe is the first day of the seminars. We had the GBC meetings for the last 2 weeks. We just finished yesterday evening. So unfortunately, I have to go to Delhi tomorrow morning. And I may come back on second morning. If I come back on second, we'll have a seminar here on second evening. Otherwise, I'll join all of you on parikram from third onwards. So, our subject matter today is teaching the Lord Rishabhdev. And this is very nicely covered in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. There are seminars all day. So I hope that all of you will take full advantage of these seminars and use your time. So Srimad Bhagavatam, fifth canto, explains the teachings of Lord Rishabhdev. And Rishabhdev, as you may know, is an incarnation of Godhead. So, we were supposed to lecture for 4 days, but since I'm only lecturing today, I'm just going to give you a little summary. Lord Rishabhdev is an incarnation of Godhead. His father's name was King Nabhi, and his mother's name was Meru Devi. King Nabhi was the son of another great devotee king, whose name was King Agnidar. And King Nabhi and his wife Meru Devi, they had no children. And King Nabhi was very desirous to have a son. But he had a very special ambition. He wanted to have a son like God. Is that possible? King Nabhi knew that if I have to get the mercy of the Lord, I have to do yajna or sacrifice. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 18th chapter, yajna, dana and tapasya should not be given up by anyone. Even the great sages should not give it up. One should not think that I'm a great sage, so I don't have to practice yajna, dana and tapasya. So King Nabhi was doing a big sacrifice, and that sacrifice was being conducted by Brahmanas. These were qualified Brahmanas. As you know, in society, there can be and there must be four varnas and four ashramas. And four varnas are Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. The Brahmanas are compared to the head. The Brahmanas are also known as the mouth of the Lord. And the Kshatriyas are compared to the arms, Vaishyas to the belly, Shudras to the leg. Now these Brahmanas were genuine, powerful Brahmanas. Today when we talk of Brahmanas, you know, the normal man thinks, oh, he's just in the business of making money. But these Brahmanas were genuine, qualified. They could even light, ignite fire without matches. And their offering to the Lord was so pure that the Lord got attracted and He personally came to the sacrificial arena where these Brahmanas were engaged in their offering. The Brahmanas were able to attract the attention of the Lord by their pure chanting. So when the Brahman, the Lord appeared over there, the Brahmanas, they welcomed the Lord. Lord Vishnu descended personally. And the Brahmanas said that we feel embarrassed that we were doing this sacrifice to have a son like you. Actually, our real goal should be to execute pure devotional service. But King Nabhi had this great desire to have a son like you. So we did this offering. So, and they gave an example. They gave an example of a beggar. He goes to a rich man and he just asks for some grains of rice. You don't go to a big man and ask him for some grains of rice. Anyway, the Lord said that I'm very pleased by this sacrifice. I'm very pleased by your purity. And as a result, I will give you any benediction that you may desire. Is anything impossible for the Lord, Nankishore? Nothing is impossible for the Lord. The Lord said that I'm very pleased by this sacrifice. I'm very pleased by your purity. And as a result, I will give you any benediction that you may desire. Is anything impossible for the Lord, Nankishore? Nothing is impossible for the Lord. So the Lord said, your desire is that you want to have a son like me. Well, how can anybody be like me? Isn't it? How can anybody be like me? No one can be like me. So, I will incarnate as your son. And the Lord agreed to become the son of Meru Devi and King Nabhi. Even Lord Krishna, when he appeared on this planet, he took on Nand Maharaj, he took Vasudev Devaki as his father and mother. He took them on as a father and mother because they had performed austerities for 10,000 years. For 10,000 years, Vasudeva Devaki ate nothing. Just they lived off trees, leaves that fell off the trees and breathed air. So the Lord became the sun. And how did he become a sun? He expanded by his plenary portion. The Lord expands by his plenary portion. And he appeared as the son of King Nabhi and Meru Devi. Now these days, There are so many people who claim to be incarnations of God, isn't it? It's become a fashion. But actually, when the Lord descends, He displays superhuman activities. So when the Lord appeared as Rishabhdev, His structure was very unique, and on His bottom of His feet, there were all the divine markings, and Lord King Nabi knew that His son is none else but the incarnation of Godhead. The citizens at that time were very, very pleased by the rule of King Nabi and King Rishabhdev. When Lord Rishabhdev appeared, King Nabi, as he grew older, installed him on a throne, and he left for Badrik Ashram to practice deep austerity. And then King Rishabhdev ruled over the whole earthly planet. King Rishabhdev had 100 sons. We'll get to this point later. And the eldest of his sons was named Bharat. And the whole planet at that time was called Bharatvarsha. Once Indra, the demigod in charge of rain, he became envious of Rishabhdev's exalted position. So what does Indra control? What does he control?
Rain.
So Indra said, I'm not going to release any rain. So he told the clouds, no dropping of rain. But without rain, can anybody live? You can't live without water. I was reading, Prabhupada wrote these purports 30 years ago. And Prabhupada was writing the purports, how in Kali Yuga, because people are becoming godless, because people are not performing yajna, gradually one day, there'll be scarcity of water. And today that has happened. Of course, right now you're in Bengal, and Bengal has special blessings of Lord. So, especially where our Mayapur Dham is, there's almost no scarcity of water. But living in Delhi, in South Delhi, many parts of Delhi, many parts of India, there's tremendous water scarcity. Here in Mayapur, wherever you turn off your tap, your water will go on flowing. But in other places, Lord Chaitanya's special mercy upon the inhabitants of this Bengal desh, Gaura desh. So when there's no yajna, there's no rainfall. And when there is yajna, then there's cooperation. Just like during Lord Rishabhdev's rule on the planet, the whole planet, everyone was fully satisfied. There was no one who was unhappy. No one had any need. Just like in India, even today, people talk about Ram Rajya. Why do we remember Ram Rajya? Because that was a period associated with intense satisfaction. Everybody was satisfied. Everybody's needs were fully provided. And there was no scarcity of anything. Therefore, everyone was fully happy. So similarly, during Lord Rishabhdev's rule, all the citizens were fully satisfied because the king considered the population to be nothing like his children. Not that I just come and meet you when I need your votes, and after I win the election, I forget you. Then I remember you after 5 years. Therefore, Prabhupada used to call this democracy to be nothing but demon crazy. So Lord Rishabhdev ruled over the earth, and he had 100 sons. His wife's name was Jayanti. Now you may say, how can anybody have 100 sons? Is anything inconceivable for the Lord? For the Lord to have 100 sons? It's nothing. He has millions of sons. Aham Bija Pradapita. Krishna says, I am the seed-giving father of all living entities. So Lord Rishabhdev was traveling all over the earthly planet. At one time, there was only one kingdom. And there was only one king. And not like today, there are these matchbox countries. The whole earthly planet was one kingdom. And Lord Rishabhdev, as he was traveling, he came to an assembly of brahmanas. Just like over here in Sridhar Mayapur, you have come to an assembly of Vaishnavas. During this Gaur Purnima festival, there will be at least 4,000 devotees coming. So, but all 4,000 may not come at one time, and we don't want them to come at one time because we don't have enough accommodation for everyone. So some goes, but they have enrollment for more than 4,000 Vaishnavas coming from different parts of the world this year. We can see also in Vrindavan, the big festival is in Kartik. More and more devotees are coming from the whole world. So Vaishnavas love to associate with each other. So there was an assembly of brahmanas where they were having a spiritual discourse on the purpose of human life. And as they were having this discussion on the purpose of human life, the 100 sons of Lord Rishabhdev were also sitting in that assembly. So Lord Rishabhdev, he entered that assembly and he gave them very valuable instructions. Prabhupada lectured very extensively on these instructions. What we have given you so far is just a summary of the situation that has led to the appearance of Lord Rishabhdev. And as we said, Lord Rishabhdev is accepted as an incarnation of Godhead on the basis of scriptural evidence, accompanied by symptoms of Godhead that were revealed in his body. So if you meet somebody who says, I'm an incarnation of Godhead, you can test him. Lord Rishabhdev, later on in the Bhagavatam you read, how he renounced his kingdom. He handed over the kingdom to his eldest son, whose name was Bharat. And because Bharat ruled over the planet in such a satisfying manner, the whole planet became known as Bharat Varsha. Today when we talk of Bharat Varsha, you generally identify India with that, isn't it? But today the India that you knew even 90 years ago is so small. At one time India included Bangladesh and Pakistan, you know that. Before that it included Burma, Sri Lanka. Before that it included Nepal and Indonesia. Even in Indonesia now if you go, they have Ramayana. You see the Garuda that we have in Mayapur in front of Radha Madhav temple? That is made in Indonesia by Indonesian artists. Garuda is the national emblem of Indonesia. The airline of that country is not called Jet Airways. It is called Garuda Airlines. It's a Muslim country and the national airline is called Garuda Airlines. Garuda is a national emblem because the Vedic culture was there at one time. Now the remnants are still there, but at one time it was a predominating culture. So, this planet was known as Bharat Varsha at that time. So King Bharat ruled over the early planet. And the citizens were so satisfied that this whole planet became known as Bharat Varsha. And just to give you an example of Lord Rishabhdev's divine personality, the stool that he would pass would have fragrance that would travel to 80 miles. Normally you pass stool, you flush it away because it stinks. And you use cow dung. But Lord Rishabhdev's stool would have fragrance that would travel to 80 miles. So Lord Rishabhdev gave very valuable instructions. Prabhupada used to regularly lecture on these instructions. So we're going to endeavor to just discuss some of them. They're quite elaborate. We don't have enough time for that. The first instruction, or the first verse of the fifth chapter of the Bhagavatam, is very, very significant. Who knows what is that verse? Nāyam deha deha bhajam nilokhe. So Lord Rishabhdev says in this famous verse, my dear boys, of all the living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded his human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that needs to. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified, and when one attains this position, he actually attains eternal blissful life, which is transcendental material happiness and which continues forever. So this is one of the most quoted verses in the Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada lectured very extensively on this verse. So Lord Rishabhdev's sons, they were already well behaved. They were not like today's children who are misbehaved. They already had learned the science of controlling the mind and the sense. But still, Lord Rishabhdev considered it his duty to instruct them about the real philosophy of life. So if we can understand these teachings of Lord Rishabhdev, if we can embrace them and practice them, then we'll definitely make spiritual progress. So Lord Rishabhdev is saying that his human life is very rare. Prabhupada has written a 2-page purport to this verse. But unfortunately, because we have limited time, I'm not reading the purport, but we'll cover the main points that Prabhupada has discussed. So Lord Rishabhdev is saying that this human life is very, very rare. We've all heard this, but unfortunately, even though we've heard it, even though we can see the miseries in practice, we still tend to forget it, isn't it? That is why we need devotee association. That is why Prabhupada created this Mayapur Vrindavan Festival. The first Mayapur Vrindavan Festival was established by Prabhupada in 1972. And in the first festival, there were only 100 devotees. First festival was even less than 100. The next year was 100. Then it went up to about 150, 200. Slowly, slowly it went on increasing. But Prabhupada was a great visionary. He knew these festivals rejuvenate devotees who are engaged in service in different parts of the world, and also following in the footsteps of the great acharyas. Then Prabhupada's disciples also instituted the system of parikrama, or visiting the holy places where the Lord performed his various pastimes. So Lord Rishabhdev is saying, then do not utilize this life just for sense gratification. And he goes on to say that the sense gratification is available even in lower forms of life, isn't it? This is not hard to understand. The dogs and the hogs and the pigeons, and the monkeys, they're far ahead of human race in the art of sense gratification. Therefore, he says that one should engage in penance and austerity. As we said earlier in our class today, Krishna has explained that 3 things should never be given up. What are they? Yajna, dana, and tapasya. Even the self-realized should not give it up. So, Lord Rishabhdev is again emphasizing this point, that penance and austerity should not be given up. Penance and austerity is a wealth of the transcendentalist. Of course, the penance and austerity that we practice is not as severe as the practice in the earlier ages. For example, Dhruva Maharaj, he was searching for God, and in his search for God, he went to the forest known as Madhuvan, and there his austerities were very severe. In the first month he ate every 3 days, second month every 6 days, third month every 9 days, and what? Fruits and berries, dry grass, water. So you don't have to worry, be so extreme. You eat, but eat only Krishna prasad. You want to chant, dance? Sure, chant and dance, but don't chant and dance in the ballrooms, but chant and dance accompanied by chanting and hearing. This morning we were hearing the Bhagavatam class. One of the devotees was revealing a story that on New Year's Eve in America, somebody was walking out of a restaurant saying, "Oh, I just spent $1,000 on dinner." But he said, "But I can see the only true happy people are you people." Well, our devotees are doing Harinam on New Year's Eve in front of some big restaurants in an American city, and the rich people were just throwing money and eating. But the man said, "I can see you people are the real happy people, not me." So the result of spiritual austerity and penance is unlimited spiritual happiness. And this is nicely revealed by the words Tavyanantam. Tavyanantam means unending spiritual happiness. So when you engage, when you practice spiritual austerity and penance, it is not that you become morose. No, you experience unending spiritual happiness. And what is the nature of this happiness? It is always increasing. The nature of material happiness is that the more you have of something, the less you want. And the nature of spiritual happiness is the more you surrender, the happier you feel. The more you surrender, the more secure you feel. The more you surrender, the more peaceful you are. So that is a result of spiritual austerity and penance. And Lord Rishandev says, this is a transcendental to material happiness, and which continues forever. So Lord Rishandev began his instructions by emphasizing the importance of practicing austerities and penances for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And we can see that as we surrender ourselves to the spiritual process, and we surrender ourselves to the instructions of the acharyas, the spiritual master and the Lord, we get the strength to give up the temptation for material life. You get the strength to give this up how? By the process of devotional service. The process of devotional service has the capacity to destroy our material anarthas. Krishna himself explains this point in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Devi Esha Gunamai Mama Maya Durataya. He says, to overcome this illusory energy of mind is very difficult. But then he goes on to say, but you can overcome how? By surrendering to me. So Lord Rishabdev begins this by emphasizing this point. And then he goes on to explain the importance of serving Mahatmas. Lord Rishabdev explains that one can free oneself from material bondage. How? By serving the great Mahatmas. And when you have the opportunity to engage in service to the Mahatmas, then that helps you to advance spiritually. And he goes on to describe what are the characteristics of a Mahatma. How do you recognize a Mahatma? You don't rubber stamp a Mahatma. A Mahatma gets recognized on the basis of his qualities. And how do you recognize a Mahatma? For he says that the Mahatmas, they are equipoised. They do not make any distinction. They do not see any difference between one living entity and another. And they're very peaceful. And they're engaged in devotional service. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains the Mahatma. What does Krishna say? Mahatmanas tu mam partha. What's the quality of a Mahatma? He's engaged in always glorifying me. Prabhupada strongly objected to a famous personality we call Mahatma just because he had a political agenda. Prabhupada, quoting the Bhagavad Gita, would often tell us what is a true Mahatma. So we hear Lord Vrishnadeva says, practice austerities and penances to engage in devotional service, you experience spiritual happiness. But one can attain to this path by the mercy of whom? Mahatma. Therefore, he says, serve the Mahatmas, serve the sadhus, take spiritual association. Just like this festival, it's an opportunity for spiritual association. It's an opportunity to associate with several Mahatmas. It is an opportunity to hear. And this is what gives us spiritual strength to make spiritual advancement. In the Bhagavatam, you read about so many stories how people's life got changed by associating with Mahatmas. In the first canto, what is the famous story that you read about? The story of Narada Muni. How Narada Muni had the opportunity of hearing discourses when he was a child. And how that gave him so much spiritual strength, that association. That even when he got news of his mother passing away, he was able to be peaceful, realizing the transient nature of everything in the material world. Prabhupada was another such Mahatma. Before Prabhupada went to the West, Krishna consciousness was hardly prevailing in the Western countries. People may have heard of Krishna, but there was hardly any penetration. He went, took this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world, established the seeds of Krishna consciousness, and today those seeds growing, and producing fruits, and how this process is continuing to expand. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, you read the story of that hunter, Mrigari, how he had the opportunity to associate with whom? With Narada Muni. So, Lord Rishabhdev is encouraging us to render service to the Mahatma. One can associate at different levels, just like in the Bhagavatam, you see Dhruva Maharaj explained, you can associate with somebody more advanced, somebody equally advanced, and somebody less advanced. When you have the opportunity to associate with somebody more advanced, then what do you do? What do you do? So, you're joyful, blissful. And Bhagavatam gives a nice example. Just like the peacocks, when they see the clouds for the first time in the rainy season, the peacocks dance in ecstasy. So similarly, one rejoices when one has this opportunity to associate. When you meet somebody equally advanced, what do? You make friendship. And when you meet less advanced, what do? Display compassion. Prabhupada gives an example. He says in the material world, when you meet somebody less advanced, you're trying to exploit him. Isn't it? Like you see the rich try to exploit the poor. When you meet somebody of equal strength, you're busy showing off how you're better off than him. And when you meet somebody more advanced, ahead of you, then he just tried to pull his leg down. Fall fine, the guy cheated and he became a big man or whatever. But in spiritual life, when you meet somebody more advanced, you're happy to serve and listen. When you meet somebody equally advanced, you make friendship. When you meet somebody less advanced, there's this big compassion. And what does compassion mean? Give them knowledge. Give them spiritual understanding by which they can elevate. And the best medium of preaching is book distribution or preaching. So Lord Rishabhdev is saying that the Mahatmas, they have no interest in material activities. You cannot be a Mahatma and still have your horses at the race course. You can't be a Mahatma and still be addicted to illicit activities. There's one very famous God-man. They claim he's an incarnation of God, but he has horses in all the famous race courses of the world. He's had many wives and so on. Anyways, so Bhagavatam, we serve the Mahatma on the basis of the scriptural definition. Then the Mahatma, he does not discriminate between any living entity. They're very peaceful. How can you become peaceful? We are all hankering for peace, isn't it? But we're not peaceful. Sometimes we say, I've become a devotee. I'm still not peaceful. Why? I thought the moment I become a devotee, I'll be peaceful. Maybe there's something wrong in the process. So what's the answer? It says, is there something wrong in the process or is there something wrong in the patient? There's something wrong in the patient. What is the cause of lack of peacefulness? The real cause is the existence of a variety of desires. I want spiritual life. I want material life. And then there's a struggle. Which one should I go for? Is that right? And that's when you become unpeaceful. Whereas on the other hand, if you become equipoised, if you become fixed in understanding that my top priority is spiritual life, and if you accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's guidance of Sanatana Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains 6 principles of surrender. What are they called? Sharanagati. He explains 6 principles of Sharanagati. And enlisting the 6, the first one he explains is accept what is favorable for spiritual advancement and reject what is unfavorable. If you want to be peaceful, this should be your guiding principle. And you're coming to the Mayapur Dham, you're coming to this festival, going on parikram. All these activities are meant to bring you to the point that you develop the strength to reject that is detrimental. When we are spiritually weak, you don't have the strength to give up what is detrimental and accept what is favorable. Just like if you're physically weak, then you get afflicted by disease very fast. And if you're physically strong, then the disease doesn't come out so fast. Am I right? So similarly, if you're spiritually strong, then you can get the strength to give up what is undesirable. And how do you become physically strong? How do you become spiritually strong? There are various means by, and one of them is associating with the devotees, serving the Mahatmas, and taking interest in Shravanam and Kirtanam. When you go on Parikram, you'll be visiting 9 different islands. And each of these different islands symbolizes or represents one of the different aspects of devotional service. And by taking advantage of these, you get the spiritual strength to give up what is undesirable. So here Lord Rishadeva is explaining that a Mahatma is equipoised. He has no interest in sense enjoyment or associating with worldly-minded people. A Mahatma associates with worldly-minded people only to the extent necessary and not beyond. He knows that if I associate beyond, it's detrimental. So we associate with worldly-minded people to the extent necessary to give Krishna consciousness and not to get some material pleasure or social life, etc. So Mahatma is equipoised. He's equal towards everyone, rich or poor. He's peaceful and is fully engaged in devotional service. That is the characteristic of a Mahatma, that is fully engaged in devotional service. And that is the goal of all of us. Whether you're male or female, whether you're brahmachari or grihastha or sannyasi, whether you reside in India, Russia, America, doesn't matter. Our goal is to be fully engaged in devotional service. Fully engaged in devotional service means molding your life in such a way that the mind and senses are always fully active. They are engaged spiritually. And when you're engaged fully spiritually, then naturally there'll be no time, no room for maya. Just like, let's say you have 4 entrances to your house. You lock 3 and leave 1 open. Then that one can be used by the thief to come in, isn't it? But if you lock all 4, then you're safe. Similarly, the scriptures advise us to mold our lives in such a way that we are fully engaged in devotional service. Then it says here, the Mahatmas are devoid of anger. So anger, krodha, is one of the anarthas. Now you may say, let's say you have 4 entrances to your house. You lock 3 and leave 1 open. Then that one can be used by the thief to come in, isn't it? But if you lock all 4, then you're safe. Similarly, the scriptures advise us to mold our lives in such a way that we are fully engaged in devotional service. Then it says here, the Mahatmas are devoid of anger. So anger, krodha, is one of the anarthas. Now you may say, did Lord Chaitanya get angry? Yeah? He got angry, no? When he heard that Nithai was there. There's another nice story. There's Advaita Acharya was getting a lot of respect from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Advaita Acharya is described as the incarnation of Mahavishnu. And he appeared long before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. They will see Advaita Acharya with a beard. So Advaita Acharya knew, beyond doubt, the Lord Chaitanya is none else but the incarnation of Godhead. Advaita Acharya would sit down with Haridas Thakur. They would engage in Krishna Katha all day. They were worshipping the Shaligram with Ganga water and Tulsi and praying, Lord, you please appear. So Advaita Acharya, he could not stand that Lord Chaitanya is giving him so much respect. Because he knew who Lord Chaitanya was. So he devised a plan by which he began to present the impersonalist philosophy. And Lord Chaitanya, when he heard of that, he asked Nityananda, is this true? Then Advaita Acharya is now preaching this philosophy. Nityananda said, yes, I also heard the same thing. And that way that Lord Chaitanya got angry and chastised him. In fact, he kicked him. So Lord Chaitanya also did get angry. Lord Chaitanya got angry when Lord Nityananda was attacked. But that anger should not be compared to our anger that we experience. Generally, when do we manifest anger? When we don't get the respect I think I deserve, when I don't get my quota for sense enjoyment in the material life, when do people go on strike, when they don't get their paid improvement, paid pieces and so on. So the Mahatma is devoid of anger. If he gets angry, he will only get angry if the Lord is being blasphemed, or the devotee of the Lord is being blasphemed, or someone's placing an impediment to presenting Krishna consciousness. So the Mahatmas are peaceful and they always work for the benefit of everyone. That's another quality of a Mahatma. He's working for the benefit of everyone. These days you may have social workers, political workers, economic workers claiming that they're working for people's benefit. But the Mahatma works for the true benefit of everyone. How does he work? By giving them Krishna consciousness, by giving them the holy name. Devotees, you may be a new devotee, but you're engaged in an activity like going on a Harinam or book distribution or preaching. You're following in the footsteps of the Mahatma. So the Mahatmas, they truly desire that everyone become happy. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, he's a Mahajan and a Mahatma. Prahlad Maharaj, thou a child, was always meditating. What was his meditation? How can I take these people back to Godhead? He wasn't worried about his own liberation, etc. So the nature of a Mahatma is that he wants to work for the welfare of everyone. He knows that the highest welfare activity one can engage in is to give people Krishna consciousness. In material life we think, if I can make money, if I get my quota of sense enjoyment, etc., that will make me happy. Even if it gives you happiness, that happiness is temporary, short-lived. Whereas the happiness that you get to the process of Krishna consciousness is permanent, and as we explained in the first verse, it is ever-increasing. So Lord Rishabdev here describes the Mahatma is one who works for the welfare of everyone. Even Lord Kapila Dev describes the qualities of a Mahatma, and in describing this quality, he explains how the Mahatmas are actually merciful. And such people do not act in a manner that is not conducive for spiritual advancement. Now further, Lord Rishabdev says that those who are interested to become Krishna conscious and going back to Godhead, they have a certain standard. What is their standard? They are not interested in any activity not related to Krishna. This is a little similar to Lord Chaitanya saying, accept everything favorable, reject everything unfavorable. So Lord Rishabdev puts the same thing in another way. He says that those who are serious about Krishna consciousness, they are not interested in anything not related to Krishna. And this, in this verse, Lord Rishabdev explains the householders. He says, even if one is a householder, their real goal is to maintain themselves and not be interested in anything not related to Krishna. And They may be engaged in executing their various duties, but their real goal is to make spiritual advancement. Just like these days we see that people are very interested, very health conscious, especially in the Western countries. Therefore, they have all these rules for packaging, etc. So what is our general standard? If something is good for my health, I'll take it. And if something is not good for health, I will not take it. So similarly, over here, Lord Rishabhdev is saying that those who are serious about making spiritual advancement, they do not like anything that is not related to Krishna consciousness. Of course, this is an advanced level, and some of you may say, but I'm not at that level. I'm at a very neophyte level. Maybe. But you should still know the ultimate standard that you have to attain. If you do not know the standard that you have to get to, then how will you ever make advancement? You may be traveling from here to Bombay, here to London, New York. You think it's very far, but at least if you get on the right path, if you get on the right plane, you'll know you'll reach your destination, even if it's very far. So similarly, the scriptures tell us what is the standard that we eventually have to attain, and then we work to attain that standard. And how do you get the strength to come to that standard? By serving the Mahatmas, by chanting, hearing, by associating with devotees. And that's how you get the strength. So sometimes we often see in a Krishna conscious movement, in the same room, different devotees are doing japa. One person doing a japa and meditating on Krishna's pastimes. Another is chanting and hearing the holy name, trying to hear attentively. Another may be chanting and thinking of material things. So the chanting is so powerful. It doesn't matter what condition you're chanting. The chanting will bring us to the highest level. But that doesn't mean that when we chant, we are not attending, we are not chanting. When we chant, our goal should be to be as attentive as we can. And the result of this is going to be your ability to make spiritual advancement, your ability to meditate on Krishna's pastimes, etc. So Lord Rishabhdev, in the first verse, has explained the importance of using the human life to serve. In the second verse, he explains the importance of serving the Mahatmas. Then Rishabhdev goes on to explain that one who engages in sense gratification is actually a madman. You may say, why is he a madman? Who knows why? Why? Why did they say, Noonam Pramata Kurudevkama? Why did they say, madman? He says, because you now have a body which is giving you nothing but pain. And by engaging in material activities, you'll again have a body which will give you nothing but pain. Therefore, he says, why are you so, a man who thinks that sense gratification will give you real happiness is nothing but a madman. He uses the word pramata. Pramata means a madman. So Lord Rishabhdev is explaining, you have a body which is giving you nothing but misery. You may be a millionaire. Can you escape death? Can you? Can you escape old age? Can he escape disease? A child born in a rich family, does he come out of the mother's womb smiling? No. We can't escape the process of birth and disease, old age. Nor can you escape the miseries caused by the mind, miseries caused by other living entities, and miseries caused by material nature. So Lord Vishnudeva is explaining that one who wants to engage in sense gratification is simply a madman. He doesn't know that his body is giving him nothing but pain. And he doesn't know that by engaging in sense gratification, you'll again get a body which gives you nothing but pain. In the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a description of the hellish planet. Of course, all of you are devotees, so you know very well the hellish planets and heavenly planets. But generally, the materialists, their thinking is they only heavenly planets. There's no hellish planet. Because, and even if they are hellish planets, be sure I'm going to the heavenly planet. You see any newspaper all over the world, you see pictures of people who have departed. What did it say? He left for his heavenly abode. But to go back to heavenly abode, you have to work hard. You can't do nonsense and then hope that you've gone back to the heavenly abode. So, in the Bhagavatam, fifth canto, there's a nice explanation of the hellish planets and the heavenly planets. Actually, I remember in America, when the fifth canto first came out, and our devotees were distributing this at the airport, and people were reading the hellish planets, they got so scared, they would just drop the books at the airport, not even take it home. Even though they paid for it, because the very concept of punishment scares them. Why do they deny the existence of the soul? Because once they know that the soul is eternal, then they also have to worry about the issue of reward and punishment. And then the concept of punishment scares them. Therefore, what they do? No, there's no soul. Everything finishes with this body. Prabhupada used to often tell us how he went to Russia and he met that Professor Kutowski. And what did that famous professor say? He said, Swamiji, everything finishes with death. The Lord Rishabdev is breaking that illusion. Lord Krishna, Lord Rishabdev says that this your present body is giving you nothing but pain. And by engaging the material activities, you'll again get what? Nothing but pain. Therefore, he says that one who thinks that the human life can give you a happiness is actually a fool. He doesn't know the material life cannot give you any real happiness. So as we said earlier, Lord Rishadev's instructions are very wide. There are two chapters. We just covered four basic verses with all the background. And I don't think we can cover all, but these four give you a very important message. And we should meditate on these messages, meditate on these instructions. And that will give you spiritual strength to make advancement. Hare Krishna.